gentlemen, and welcome to another rip-roaring episode of Art and Labor. This is the podcast dedicated to art and or cultural workers, their struggles, their triumphs, their tribulations, their consciousness.
Yes. Can you believe a year ago, today, it was so different, and there's a tangible consciousness that has been built over the past year.
Yeah.
And we've chronicled it all here on Art and Labor.
Art and Labor, folks.
Our back episodes, they're all killer.
We basically started it.
What is the metaphor? The piston box?
Oh, yeah. We were like...
Were we the air in the piston box?
We're the thing that makes the piston.
The mechanism.
We're the explosion that...
Which part of the piston box metaphor is art and labor?
Oh, write us in.
Write us in.
Yeah. Tell us what part of the engine we are, and we will read it on the pod. Can't guarantee anything else.
We got big egos today, folks, because we've just been getting tons of really nice fan mail.
Yeah. Oh, our fans are sweeties.
Like, you know, little DMs just being like, hey, love your show. Like, and then much longer emails that are really nice. Just going to read a couple of them. Like I just feel like this week we've got a really nice outpouring of support. We had a lot of people on our Patreon and stuff, like it just felt like a really nice week for the show.
Yeah.
And we want to pay that forward
by talking about what you wrote.
Well, what I was going to say was we'll be launching a store this week.
Right.
Yeah. And we'll have items for people like the show.
We'll have buy one. Designs.
And
we'll
if you've given items. To us on the $15 level, you'll get one in the mail, complimentary.
An item. We don't know exactly what we can afford to send out that won't cost more than what you give us.
We're working on it. There's options for sure, and we're gonna have prints because I have a little digital print shop in my house, and Lucia has designed a new shirt.
Oh yeah, it's really Sonic. Should I just say it?
Yeah.
Did we post a picture on the Instagram?
Picture is not posted yet. I'm waiting.
Okay. Yeah, it's Sonic.
Yeah, it's
destroying evil, basically.
It's Sonic popping a Jeff Koons balloon dog and
with a hammer and sickle, and all the little animals pop out and they're free. So there you go, everybody, everyone on the
you
Discord.
You asked for it.
Yeah, it is. It's crowdsourced, and it from them through my hand back to you on a shirt or a poster.
And Lucia is an amazing painter. For those who don't know. She has a show opening tomorrow.
Oh, that's true. Things have been pretty busy, actually, which is nice, because I definitely remember back a few months ago when I was like, come on, just let me live, please.
You can, like, sense our mental state on certain episodes. Do the math. Try to guess which ones.
Yeah, I think mostly the bad ones are the ones where we're going, Jesus, oh, Jesus.
Jesus fucking Christ.
I don't even know.
What the fuck is that?
I can't anymore. Like,
we got a really dark show today, but we're trying to open it up with some upbeat stuff. We got a really nice email from Samuel. Samuel says, been meaning to write for a while. I'm a huge fan. As someone who's been working professionally in the arts my whole life, it can be unnervingly up my alley. My background is in theater and performing arts, and I've spent over a decade navigating around the various labor models in these worlds, both union and non-union. I've worked in nonprofits, regional theater, and in a lot of different ways, but mostly I've built a lot of scenery. There's a certain tick in the way that regional theater companies talk about their employees. The phrase is always something to the effect of all of our valuable artists and artisans, to the point The point being that every single person they refer to as an artist, actors, designers, directors, is a member of a union, and all of the other labor that makes the play possible, technicians, carpenters, painters, electricians, is non-union. This may be painting with a broad brush, but it correlates pretty tightly with the type of union busting and exclusion that exists in regional theater spaces. Artists will always be taken care of, but if you're one of the technical people, your options have been essentially reduced to corporate events and convention centers. I won't read the last part because it gives away location, but anyway, those are just my thoughts, wanted to share. And again, you guys are great. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah, thank you.
Very, very sweet of you.
And that's totally legit, because I've definitely seen a lot of that going on with the institutions unionizing around the city, where it'll be like, oh, well, those are the maintenance people that just keep everything afloat, so they can't be a part of the union. But the people who handle the art are fine to be in it. But not if you're too high up. If you manage handling art, then no. It's just, it's really silly the way that people play semantics and then keep each other out of, like, having benefits in their lives.
Oh, my God. Yeah, and I've seen it the other way, too, where, like, the technical side of a project is unionized, but then the, like,
oh, totally.
Acting side,
like,
is not, or
there'll be a carpenter's
whatever.
Union,
right,
really
right, right.
strong in other places. Like, that's yeah. a lot in, like, film.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like, if it's, like, a web series or something, like, and they're just using non-union actors, and then, like, but they have their... have a set, they're working on a set that's unionized or whatever.
Yeah. Hey, how about this? If you're an employee, you can join a union.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Yeah. Hey, what if things were really simple? Like, you could just you could actually just join a union and get work, and yeah. be like, you could be a human being. Maybe we'll think about having a union for dogs too. Maybe also
dogs.
Cats and birds.
Dogs and cats. I mean,
and plants.
Whenever animals are acting, they have a lot more rights than web actors.
Yeah, it's true. People get outraged if a dog dies in the filming of a movie, but
people die in film.
They
filmmaking
get culty.
All the time.
Yeah, yeah, like The Crow.
Oh my God!
It's just a cult favorite now that somebody died.
Yeah, and who's that? Landis, wasn't it? Max Landis's dad or whatever. Which one is the older Landis? It was on like, what was it on? It was on like The Perfect Storm or something.
Oh.
There's a helicopter that killed a child.
Yeah.
Like and a.
It never happened. Yeah. It never happened. It's fine. Children, they are not full humans because they haven't given to the economy yet.
Oh, boy. So much evil in the world. We'll get to it.
Hey, let's stave
more
it
fan
off
mail. More
with
fan
another
mail.
Little fan mail. Let's see here. This one is from, forgive me if I'm pronouncing the name wrong, Ilium. They're writing, howdy y'all. Just wanted to write in to express some appreciation for you and all your show. I'm still a baby leftist, but a young adult, yuck. and I lack a lot of theoretical base to pull from as I encounter new ideas in the world. You all hit a specific balance of conversation, candor, and theory that really strikes a chord with me and is helping me hone my brand of bullshit.
Hell yeah.
Love that. Hoping I can one day make enough money to patronize you all. Hey, listen, you can just keep your money and just tell all your friends about us instead.
Yeah, if you can't afford the Patreon, you can help us by writing a review or sharing on your social media.
And they say, thanks really for the cast
it.
And for filling my mind with political song.
That's very nice.
Yeah,
thank you so
short
much.
And sweet.
That's very, very sweet. Oh my God.
Yeah. And then we got another one. Michaela says, hi, I'm really, really glad you're talking about the anti-idpol so-called left explicitly instead of only commentating on Twitter. Thanks. Then there's, you know.
Yeah.
Some
but
other
a
stuff.
Bunch of shit stirring, but.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we appreciate
it. We appreciate
that.
The shit stirring. But probably shouldn't get on it here.
Yeah, but you just know that you can write
it.
Us.
Yeah.
And we will read it.
Yeah, we want to start reading what people have to say. We set up a phone number and it's still on our Twitter.
You can call
and leave a message. And if you will play it on the air. People did do that and we never played them. We really appreciate those too.
Yeah, we just thought it was really neat and then we forgot. We were like, wow. Well, like,
we should do
cares.
A fan bag episode, and we never did. But I think we should just regularly incorporate it in the front of the show from now on, because it's just a nice thing. And it's just nice to, I think it's good. And
it helps
you could totally reach out to us.
Too.
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's hard to realize what is reaching everybody out there. And we definitely, like, have the metrics that we can just see, you know, our consumers as a lump. Or we can see followers as a mass of kind of, like, flies or something. But when you write us a letter or you
review us on iTunes.
Yeah. I know, it's really lame. Stupid. Everybody talks about that. Y'all know about it. But you actually stand out to us as thoughtful and beautiful souls that we can then conceive of inside of human beings. And, you know, you make us feel real. You're real. It's just
really
a more
nice
human experience.
Yeah. And if you don't know, you can reach us at artandlaborpodcast@gmail.com.
Just write us stuff.
Write us.
We'll read it.
We'll definitely read it. Thank you so much for all the new Patreons. And for those who haven't heard, Drip is folding in October, so please switch over to Patreon.
Yeah, all we have is Patreon, and we might not even have that because
who the fuck knows?
They're so crazy. Patreon, you crazy.
All this stuff is not sustainable, and if you know, we do a podcast about art and labor issues, and it sucks that it's like the, you know, tech startupification of everybody's projects.
Yeah. Oh, I went on a rant about this last night, actually.
Ooh.
Yeah, I went on a rant about how Patreon is a corrosive model for community building and for economy on a whole, because it atomizes the individual into becoming like an alienated business hub, and you have to consider every aspect of the business just simply because of the, like, form that economic dealings are taking around you.
It's honestly a form of eugenics, because if you apply it to GoFundMe,
yeah,
it's literally life or death if you're, like, popular online or whatever.
No, it is. And then the ways that people can't get around it are, like, it's so ingrained in the way that we will instantaneously view another human and, like, you have all of these preconceptions that were like, oh, well, how many dollars is this person worth?
It's like a tech libertarian's fucking wet dream.
Yeah, it's insane. But, you know, we can see it, you can see it, and there's
and
no
like
other way around
like we've
it.
Said many times, give us cash straight up.
Yeah.
We'll take
Find
it.
Find us.
Mail it.
Throw
mail
money.
Mail us money.
Yeah, Venmo us.
Send
us
to him.
Weird, but
yeah.
Facebook also has, like, a Venmo option now. Or, I mean, it has for a while.
And they're trying to make their own crypto.
Yeah. It's great. Life. When you get money on Facebook, the screen just, like, explodes into little coin GIFs.
Why they like, overload all the websites with all of this totally unnecessary, like, HTML5 animation bullshit.
Yeah.
Pisses me off so much.
But look, what if they didn't treat you like a five-year-old?
I just want to go back to, like, 2004, where every webpage had a basic option.
Yeah.
Where it could, like, you strip down everything just to the text.
I just
want to
see the text. Yeah, I want to go back to 1998 when it was all green and on black, and I'm vintage like that. I'm old.
I just want that because I've got a very shitty phone plan now, and like my phone's getting older, so like when I stream stuff, my phone gets extremely laggy, and I'm just like, well, if all these other websites didn't have all this fluff, it would probably be fine.
Yeah. they're trying to edge us out, you know. If you can't handle supporting and purchasing more bandwidth, then sorry, no Taylor Swift songs for you.
I don't want them anyway. That new song sucks.
You just mentioned it the other week and it's been stuck in my head.
I did? Oh, God.
No, it's okay. I just, it happened. I think it's very powerful.
It's like the tone policing anthem. Like, hey, you over there being critical, maybe you should calm down.
Wow.
That's like what the song is, right?
Oh, I thought, well, the video, I thought she was trying to say, like, we're all worthless slugs that are actually completely uniform, because the whole thing of, like, there's nobody in the world like you and nobody in the world like me, and that's the whole point. And then the video is, like, everyone looks the same, and they're just... they're all dancing the same, and I thought, oh, ha, that's right, individuality is a lie.
It's so funny because it's like, I don't think that was her intention, but I can see that read, because like
it's fascist.
I think to her, she's like, look at all these beautiful drag queens I've got on my video, and aren't they all so special and unique?
But no, it's like, their individuality is completely collapsed into one unified front that is like a weird minty green and like Pepto-Bismol pink, and they're all doing things I'm sure they don't really want to do.
Oh, they all got paid a good check, I heard, though, so that's good.
Oh, she pays her workers. They all kind of look like they're workers in... They're in some kind of Wes Anderson
Oh, boy. Factory. Man, we can do an episode about, like, how, something that maybe started as a very, like, unique visionary director has just become so co-opted by a monolithic marketing structure. Like,
oh, yeah.
Like, because then he went on to do commercials, and then now, like, that type of commercial is, like, very popular and, like, he's still making that same type of movie, but it's like, it's no longer, it's like Tim Burton is the same. Yeah. It's like you start out like visionary, unique, and then after a while you're just like subsumed into mass culture and it just means nothing.
Totally. We call it the progenitor's journey into obscurity and ubiquity.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah, dude, this shit is real. I'm reading something about that right now. The way that like art can begin a trajectory, like whatever, you know, we call art as the concept that is manifest and then is like injected into a culture, and how it, the interplay then like becomes like reified by capital. So like the piece that I'm reading now is just about like different sexual identities, and then the way that it was incredibly radical for people to be like, hey, this is my queer expression and I'm gonna live this way and I'm going to make artifacts that like concretize my life, and you can't and get away from it.
Cut to rainbow capitalism.
Right, exactly. Like, so yeah, just like breaking down all the steps in between there, where it's like, shit,
first
that happened anyway.
Non-binary cop or whatever the fuck. Right. Like I saw a headline.
Oh,
like,
Jesus Christ. So stupid. No, that's crazy. Yeah, that's like people can have themselves fully gentrified inside and out.
Oof. Ain't that the truth? God. Oh, it's depressing, but it's something that we have to reconcile with as, having a full scope of, you know, transphobic, patriarchal, white supremacist capitalism. It's all
Well, the weird thing is that the capitalism doesn't, The capitalism, you know, the thing that's that floating one, around outside
big,
of us.
The big one.
Not the thing that we enact and that we're a part of and that we actually inform.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, you guys, I'm a leftist.
I couldn't possibly be participating in capitalism. I'm look, XYZ.
Money is for you guys, okay? I do barter system. It's cool. Do you, you know, give it a shot. But it's weird because the conscious capitalism movement has actually like been the most adaptive and I don't know, binding force that we do have. We have all, you know, it's like all the things that we participate in, like, you know, zine fairs and like taking care of each other with different shows and places to get together, like all these community things. Everything is a part of like building something, starting it, helping it grow. And like the growth model that we use is still...
Yeah, it's still entrenched in...
Still capitalism.
Capitalism, yeah.
So we're completely stuck in it constantly. And it's like... To let go of the idea that there's some evil outside of us and then realize, like, oh, okay, so I have to change myself if I'm gonna...
The bad group is in us.
The bad. The phone call is coming from inside the house.
For those who missed our Venom bit.
Yeah!
There's a good goop and a bad goop.
Yes. If you want to join the goopsurrection, then you're gonna have to steer clear of Gwyneth Paltrow goop.
That's bad goop.
Venom is the good goop, and Venom can go inside of you, give you class consciousness, and help you fight billionaires. But Gwyneth Paltrow will give you goop, and it just sort of sits on your face.
Yeah. Or in your vag in the form of an egg or whatever.
Oh, bacterial goop. No.
Oh, man.
Now let's talk about
hard,
what we came here for.
Hard transition. Speaking of Hollywood bullshit, the rest of this episode is going to be the dark... pedophile ring.
Yeah, trigger warning, folks. Yeah. We're gonna say pedophile stuff.
Bad man, Jeffrey Epstein. We were interested in particular Epstein's ties to the art world.
Yeah, very, very cool stuff, everybody.
There is a hyperallergic piece by Zachary Small. Called Disgraced Billionaire Jeffrey Epstein's Art World Connections. Convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein returned to court this week on sex trafficking charges. Members of the art world are among Epstein's defenders and victims.
Yeah, so Epstein has been working with the MoMA for a while. He's got a crazy baller art collection. Like, his stuff, it's like he's got like Francis Bacon's and, you know, it's like, oh, like Picasso's works on paper, you know, just,
yeah.
But he also, as it says in this article here, likes to collect the emerging art of young women.
I wonder why that could be.
I think he appreciates their talent.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's not to maybe get them indebted to him.
Who knows?
Invite them onto his island.
I mean, so this article is about Maria Farmer. So she was 25 and she was at the New York Academy of Art. But then she also had a younger sister who got roped into this, and the younger sister was 15. So I'm assuming that maybe Jeffrey Epstein really liked the anime that the little sister was drawing.
Collecting some of that, that's very,
just like maybe just like, oh, hey, really dig your manga, or like, is that a drawing of Kirby?
Yeah,
did you come over here, have an ice cream?
Oh my god,
hey, listen, I'm innocent,
come into my temple.
Yeah. Well, so he gave her, he gave Maria $6,000, and that, you know, for a piece from her first show, I guess, which is like, actually, so when you're having a show and somebody gives you $6,000, that's actually like more than usual. If you're like a student, yeah, and then you're selling something, you might be excited to get like $1,000, you know, or like $2,000. Yeah. But for somebody who doesn't come from money, because I know there are different strata, and like, you know, I guess when I was starting out, I'd be like, wow, sick, dude. Someone wants to pay me $500 for this thing totally. That I worked a month on. Like, I didn't even know, like,
that I worked, I put like 500 hours of work into.
Yeah, like, and yeah, and it's like, I like sweat blood to make this thing, and it was super hard because it's like all the skills don't come naturally yet. So yeah. It's like, so that's like the point where she's like, oh, you know, I'm in the New York Academy of Arts or whatever. So you're having this really traditional style of education as well. Mm. So just like, clearly this person is like focused on like some kind of craft, and then this guy comes along and is like, I'm gonna offer you like 2 to 3 times more than you thought you could get. And that's like how the thing started.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's really insidious, because like the whole like, I want to help your career, I'm just interested in,
yeah,
boosting your career is, you know, very prevalent in the art world.
Yeah, that's actually like a gauntlet that you have to go through. And there are places in the city that are blacklisted for actually being like the little viper's nest of dudes who will just predate anyone coming from an undergrad program and be like, oh, of course you can do your like nude performance art here, like we're really friendly about that stuff, just incredibly friendly.
Oh my god.
Yeah, and it sucks, like it sucks that, you know, everybody has to learn that stuff. Yeah. I'm tempted to just like make a list of places that have had known offenders that, you know,
yeah,
not only on the end of collectors, but also there are gallerists, that especially gallerists, I've known not only like the people who have approached me, but people who have approached friends who are just God. You know, they get into like long-standing relationships with people who will be like stringing them along.
Well, it's like, okay, so the type of person who starts a gallery nowadays is often a rich person with time on their hands, who wants something to funnel money into. Like, it's you have a gallery, then you have a new thing to write your taxes off with.
Well, that's one type. That's one type.
But if you think about the type who would also want to be a predator,
I think that fits.
It's like, yeah, if I open this, and then people will come to me and want to be around me because I have money and a venue.
Vipers.
Yeah.
Awful. Venus flytraps, damn it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I, obviously, this is all to say there are also people that have a really earnest connection to artistic output and want to support and see like artists thrive. So that is not a part of what we're critiquing here, which is just horrible dudes.
Well, it's like, I mean, that's what I like about when I went to Common Field, which is like this conference thing that takes place in a different city every year, and it's like workshops and panels for like alternative art spaces and artist run art spaces and things like that. I kind of wish that they could come to a clear, I don't know, like mission statement, or like this is how we think galleries should be modeled, and like, you know,
mm-hmm.
I wish that like that group of people could all come together and organize some sort of like set of, I don't know, guidelines, like, but, and like actually hold it accountable, unlike things like wage or whatever, which like is good, but like nobody, there's not a big enough group that's actually enforcing that in any way.
Yeah, there's just this sort of like word of mouth campaigns that you know, it's kind of like incumbent on artists and people in the community to share certain amounts of gossip with each other, to be like, oh, so-and-so approached you for a show. Well, just watch out because that guy is going to ask you out to dinner and pretend that it's a meeting, and, you know, just don't drink any of the alcohol he hands you or whatever. And then the person has to be like, oh, damn, okay, I will walk around with fear.
Like, I already said yes, so.
Right. Or, yeah, it's like, fucked. Cancel or I don't know. Like, God. Trust your own instincts. Maybe it's real this time. Who knows?
And then even in, like, the little scenes, even in, like, the alternative art venue scenes, it's like, the scene politics of those are so weird because, like, whenever there's a predator, it's like, this person is a predator and we're not going to book him anymore. And then, like, that person just goes and fucks off to the Midwest or to L.A. or whatever. And then it's just like...
And they start all over again.
Started to make a new name on Facebook and, like...
Yeah. Well, that's what you do if you don't have billions of dollars from a hedge fund. If you do, you just completely rewrite the legal system.
Yeah, yeah.
Just force
and
it.
And have them, you get your jail sentence reduced to basically furlough or whatever, where you're just like,
have them strike you a sweetheart deal.
You have like your own floor in the prison and you only go there at night, and during the day you can still do your job and go home and stuff.
Yeah, prison's just my hotel.
Yeah. Fucking waste of everyone's money and time. And
it's great. No, I think it's great because it gives me hope that if I get in trouble for something, I will also be able to go to a hotel.
You won't.
No, maybe I will. Maybe I'm just going to make that much money. And then when I do something wrong, I get to just be treated like a prince.
Oh,
yeah.
I can't wait for you to be a billionaire.
It's going to be great. I'm going to do all the crimes and then I'm just going to get away with it. And then I'm going to go to the party when I'm done and then get in trouble again.
Great.
Because I can't get rid of the photographs of my girls. That's a part of my art collection too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. And you know, gotta go to New York. Gotta go to New York sometimes. So that's how he was got, was because that all of that happened in Florida, and then when he landed in New York for some reason, that's when they got him again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they ended up searching his townhouse, which has some more creepy art in it.
Oh, my God. Tell us about it.
Oh, my gosh. You guys. Okay. There is an article from Town and Country magazine that came out on July 10th.
Jesus Christ.
The title is The Secret History of Jeffrey Epstein's New York Townhouse. Before it became infamous as Jeffrey Epstein's House of Horrors, 9 East 71st Street was a gilded mansion with an illustrious past. How he came to own it remains a mystery.
Oh.
It's so exciting. I like, now, I how wonder, much do you I think wonder- it's going to be more? Like, how? Honestly, though.
What a mystery that he was mysteriously given a townhouse. It couldn't have been in exchange for anything, could it have?
Oh, God.
I wonder how he got that townhouse.
No. Hmm.
Really makes you think. How does he make his money? Oh, is it, what is it, consultancy or some vague bullshit?
Hedge fund.
Hedge fund? Yeah, hedge fund shit.
Hedge fund.
I don't know.
Oh, wow. The house is only $77 million. I think it's probably going to go up to at least $100 million now.
After this press?
Yeah.
God. Jesus Christ. Oh, and I found the bit about in the Hyperallergic about his safe. Federal prosecutors intercepted Epstein on Saturday at Teterboro Airport in New Jersey after investigators discovered a cache of lewd photographs of girls kept within a safe stored at the billionaire's 45,000 square foot mansion located on Museum Mile. Hours after his arrest, several other women contacted the Bureau with complaints against the former convict.
Oof.
So he has a safe full of photographs, a true collector.
Yeah, and apparently he's also got a mural that's a prison scene.
Oh, man. What?
Yeah, I don't know. Gonna have to look and see if we can get some pictures of this. He's got really creepy stuff, though. It, you know, like, aside from that... Oh, yeah, wait. He has a mural on the terrace the whole length of the building of a prison yard with barbed wire and guard towers. The inmates are out exercising, and he pointed to one and said, "That's me. That's to remind myself that I could go back there." Yeah, dude, you could. That's good job.
I also have a mural of myself getting decapitated in a guillotine to remind myself that I could get decapitated.
I have a little guillotine that's in my living room, and then when the FBI agents crowbarred my door open, I just... when they came in, my head was in there, and I was like, do your worst.
Just ready for it.
Just go.
Oh, my God. Well, you know, another piece of art is the temple, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
So I was reading a little about the temple in the Everything We Know About Jeffrey Epstein's Private Pedophile Island.
God.
By Matt Stieb in New York Magazine. And, it, you know, Pedophile Island or Orgy Island are the ways that the locals in the Caribbean refer to Jeffrey Epstein's two private islands. That's just how they
why are they
refer
so
to
mean?
It. Yeah. So he's got this villa. Okay, oh my God. So before he kind of went to prison, Epstein commissioned a renovation of Little St. James per the Times. The villa will occupy the island's promontory, which offers views of the Atlantic on one side and the Caribbean on the other. It will have a separate library to house Mr. Epstein's 90,000 volumes, a Japanese bathhouse, and what he calls a Ziegfeld movie theater. Oh my God.
So there are some friends who work at a 3D printing studio, and I will keep this anonymous, but here's some hot goss.
God.
Okay, so apparently the things that they know he commissioned, and this was a while ago, but yeah.
Yeah.
But he commissioned like a baby on a spit for one of his island homes that he could like put on a mountain or like a hill or whatever, so you just see it out there. But and then he also like has
wait. So how big was it? Because I was imagining it as like small and like part of the temple or something.
Yeah, I don't think it's.
I think it's big.
I'm gesturing. With my hands now, like the size
like three
of
three feet or something.
Like a large. I think it seemed in my mind to be like this, but no photos.
Yeah.
But this is just a mystery. Like, what? How big is the baby?
Yeah, there's some photos of the temple.
Yeah, it looks cool.
Yeah, the temple. It looks cool, but it's obviously where a lot of sex acts were going on.
Yeah.
Because it says. On a hill on the southwest point of Little St. James Island, there is a temple painted with blue and white stripes, topped with a golden dome. The point is flanked by statues painted in gold. One of them appears to be the trident-wielding Poseidon, the Greek god of the sea, while the others look to be like birds perched on the corners of the roof. It is surrounded by a line of palm trees on the terrace with a labyrinth motif. Finally, the exterior seemed to incorporate an optical illusion to create the impression that the exterior windows and doors are set within the cave flanges. According to island workers who spoke to the Associated Press, the building may have been designed as a music studio, but...
oh, yeah, because he's classically trained.
Yeah,
because
he's a pianist. But Business Insider also contacted the engineer and the contractor, James Booth, or both, who noticed a few suspicious details about the temple. It's styled like what you might see on a castle, with what appears to be reinforcing lock bars across the face, he said. What makes it peculiar is that if you wanted to keep people out, the bar would be placed on the inside of the building, but the locking bar appears to be placed on the outside of the building, as if it were intended to lock people in. From this perspective, sound dampening walls sounds much more suspicious.
Yeah, I can't imagine that being an issue. It's just that, like, when he plays music, he wants to be locked in there so he can get the song out, you know? I don't see
anything
wrong with that.
It's like a Pomodoro device.
Yeah, and then just, you know, I don't think it's weird that people who are scuba diving in the surrounding area aren't allowed nearby either, because, honestly, like, if he's that attuned to sound, he can probably feel the vibrations. Like, it's just, it's science.
They're going to find so many dead bodies.
They're going to... I'm so excited. So the other thing that he has that I guess is not... It's not as salacious for sure, but he's got like a private Bugatti racetrack. And he just like... I know. He just races nobody in his Bugatti by himself. But then he had the same people install these like heartbeat sculptures so that when he drives by, it looks like... a zoetrope animation of a heart beating because he's like driving so fast and he just watches the heartbeat like when he goes around and around in circles, because I think he's that fucking crazy that he's like
he's just tracing any, like, to him he needs to go that extreme to get any sort of serotonin, so yeah. He just has to go to all of these huge lengths because he's such like a fucking twisted up dick old man that he can't like...
Yeah, he can't just, like, find something he likes, yeah, and then enjoy eating dinner with them and, like, talking about life.
No, he has to have, like, Salo every day.
Yeah. Like... yeah, 120 days, and then 120 more.
Salo forever.
Yeah,
like,
Salo.
Yeah, there's going to be a reimagining of Salo, with starring Jeffrey Epstein, and it's going to be called Salo Forever or Salo 365 Days or something.
Oh, it's just going to be like
24/7 Salo 24/7.
It's just going to be like Jeff and Friends. It's going to be like This Is Life or Hey, No One Can Hear You Out Here.
Can a journalist like go through the Epstein Lolita Express travel logs and find all the art gallerists on it? Because I don't want to do it, but
oh yeah,
somebody should.
Yeah, there should be a whole takedown, like linking everybody in the Democratic Party, all across the board, really.
And that's hopefully starting to happen. Like people are,
yeah.
Like even like the big thing, online. One of them was Nancy Pelosi's daughter. Was like she tweeted like, you know, some of our faves are going to be implicated.
Yeah, I heard about the faves because honestly, faves. I'm totally cool with the war crimes and with the sexual degeneracy. Because, you know, these people come over and they talk about, like, the new furniture they bought for their summer cottage. Like, and I agree with their taste. Like, Shabby Chic is all right for Martha's Vineyard. We all agree. Like, how
I'm outfitting my pool house and...
Oh, I just get so lonely when I don't have people that share my point of view. And, like, these people are my favorite, you know? Like, I love them. Some of their decisions aren't the ones I would make.
Like, they're all Meghan McCain. Like the Democrat politician children are the same as Meghan McCain being like, Joe Lieberman was like a second uncle to me, or whatever the fuck.
Yeah, Joe Lieberman literally was my second uncle. And that is a really important bond because it's like the closeness that you can't achieve with parents who are like too close.
Oh my God.
Or uncles that are like close, and it's just like
Jeffrey Epstein was my uncle.
Oh God, maybe
you poor thing. That's awful. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Oh no. We're gonna start getting to the next generation of all of Epstein's rape babies, and they're gonna grow up and be like, "I want to go to school. Where's my money?"
Yo. Whatever, give them anything they want.
Yeah, they should all get like one of his limbs.
Yeah.
We'll draw and quarter him, and then we'll hand limbs to everybody, and they can cash it in at the treasury.
Yeah, that's how money will work in the future.
Yeah, do you have a piece of the billionaire? Okay, well, here's a gold bar that is the same weight as their limb.
Yeah, I'm into this. I'm into this.
Like, yeah, just blood for blood. Blood in, blood
out. It's like so beyond like Hanarabi because it's like, no, literally, we only accept billionaire parts. So,
Well, DNA test. We're using 23andMe for the right reasons.
Wow. Wow. They have all the DNA. So it's like a, of an anarchist, like authoritarian government that has access to a DNA bank, and you get money in exchange for positive ID test of
So basically it's we have, well, there's like an anarchist society, and then like the authoritarian branch is one that we sequester. Because so they have to like be in charge of all of the DNA and the gold bars, and it's sad but true that we have a management structure there. Otherwise, full anarchy, and we just have very fluid roles. We all decide, like, how are you better at stabbing? Are you better at shooting? How are you with a flamethrower? And we all switch weapons when we go hunting.
The people who are in charge of like the DNA banks are like former family members of billionaires who have renounced the billionaires but don't deserve to die themselves
or something. Oh, yeah. We have a we've got a program for class traders. If you do want to divest, you go through it's a little program, and you know, we have like multiple choice tests at the end where it's like, would you let somebody starve in front of you just so that you could get new shoes? And if they say no, we're like, all right, you're good. And if they're like, yes, I would, I deserve shoes, then we just throw them back into the billionaire's pen, and we make them run around and we tase them.
Wow.
Till it's time to go hunting.
That was a fun little fantasy we went on.
Hey, it's only a fantasy until it becomes reality, you know? Speaking of crazy... Wait, I told you about Naomi Campbell's house.
No.
Really?
Wait, but I was just reading something about Naomi Campbell.
Wait, I think I did show you. Naomi Campbell lives the Eye of Horus.
That's crazy. Okay, because I was, before we met up, I was reading about Naomi Campbell's insane routine that she does every time she goes on a flight.
Oh, yeah. Naomi Campbell is in the news because she turned 41.
Okay.
No, I don't know.
I just saw, I just saw this insane, like, ritual she does where she gets on first class and she takes out all those little bags and
oh God, good for her. Jesus Christ. Yeah, she lives, I feel like I told everybody this, I maybe even said it on the pod before, but I'm still amazed because her billionaire boyfriend made her a house that's a dome in the middle of Cleopatra Island, and Yeah.
Who's their billionaire boyfriend?
Oh, some finance dude. I don't know. Yeah, right. just the same.
Yeah.
But it's like he's the good Epstein, you know, because he just dates world-class models like you're supposed to. And then he gets a house that's like related to her ethnicity and stuff.
Like, and like, yeah, deeply fetishized.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Like, but that's like really good and nice, you know? And God. And it's like romantic, and the symbolism is there because Cleopatra Island was where Antony took Cleopatra and then sprinkled sand from Egypt on the island because she said she would only want to live in Egypt and walk on Egyptian ground. So then he was like, well, fine, fuck it. Now this is Egypt because I put the sand there. Now take your island, bitch.
God, rich people use history as like set dressing for their really boring lives or whatever.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's boring in the moment, but then when you zoom out in a drone or a helicopter, you get to see
that. It looks like the Iron Horus.
It looks just like it.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I mean, it'd be cool if the public could use it or whatever.
It would be great. Yeah, I want to go there. I'm jealous. I don't want to go there. I want someone to make one for me.
We all deserve our own Eye of Horus.
Yes. That's why, yeah, I'm holding out, you know? That's why I'm, like, still playing the game, is that maybe, just maybe, I could rise above sheer force of will and talent and also having the super looks of a cover model.
Great.
Yeah. And the ruthlessness to capitalize on every moment of life.
Yeah, God, it's yeah, it's just depressing how much wealth like a handful of people have.
It is. Also, just gonna circle back to the MoMA thing, Leon Black.
Yeah.
What a freak! What a weirdo! Why the hell? It's so insane, not only that people have so much money, but that they're like, I'm going to go to this party. Also, I'm going to let you into my institution. I'm not going to have a problem with it. But if there are people in the MoMA who are like displaying these opinions that don't quite jive with our program, like they can't stay. I'm sorry.
It's really scary, honestly, because a lot of these institutions are so indebted to these literal, like, sociopath billionaire guys. And that's, you know, so much, like, historically important and, like, deeply cared about art pieces that are in jeopardy, and hundreds and hundreds of people's, like, livelihoods and jobs and, like, you know,
more and more all the time
that are tied up and at the whims of some of the most deranged, fucking depraved psycho billionaires.
Exciting people that we aspire to be. That's what
we love them.
Yes.
God, it really does depress. I don't know if I've told this story on the podcast before. Maybe I did, but like one time I was at like a Silent Barn general meeting, and there are all these like young kids who are like getting more involved in the Silent Barn, and they were all like obsessed with Elon Musk.
Oh God.
Like talking about like how much they like him and want to be like him, and like
as far as that echelon of humanity goes, I could see being Elon Musk over, you know, anybody. I'd rather be him than like Hillary Clinton.
That's,
you know?
I mean, honestly, yeah, I agree.
Yeah, he is the fun one. He is like, oh, look, it's a Tesla.
I made a tunnel underground.
Yeah, I made a
$3 billion.
I made a drawing of a tunnel. And then I made out with my Grammy girl.
God. I'm like obsessed with hating the color yellow, even though it's a safety hazard not to have yellow in my car manufacturing plants. I don't care because I don't like it.
Wow.
That's a real Elon Musk thing he did to his workers.
That's so weird. Dude, yellow is the people's color. Yellow informs us of how we can keep from getting hit by a train, how we can stay on the right side of the road, who is working in the street, and who doesn't want to get hit by a car. Mm-hmm. Yellow helps us in our day-to-day lives make protest movements. Yeah. Who remembers not only the yellow vests, but the yellowists.
Oh, the yellowists.
Do you remember that shit?
Yeah, we have never...
We should do an episode about yellowists.
A yellowists episode.
Yeah, that was wild. Just defacing the art with the color yellow and then getting also put in jail for that.
I think we should have Alex Deegan on for the yellowists episode.
Oh, hell yeah.
If you're listening, Alex, please come
on. Alex, come on down.
Come on and talk about the defaced Rothko with us.
Yes. Lorelai and I made an episode of the Cool Girls Club, which was a collaboration that we were doing at the time of the Yellowists.
Oh my God. I think I remember this. Yes.
Yeah. So, I was like, oh, well, we should wear like safety goggles as our trademark. And then when the Yellowists story was breaking and they were like, oh, anything we put the color yellow on becomes a part of the movement. And we just started going like, oh, what if we just use our safety goggles as the color yellow and then... like put them on everything.
Just put them on things.
Yeah, so we would make video works of just like appropriating things by putting safety goggles on them, but it just looked like then all these products had faces. Oh my God, it's showing? Minions. Joey is showing us a page of Minions.
You are prescient.
They are yellow and they have goggles. Damn. This is so fucked up.
Damn, you were Minions before Minions.
Yes.
You and Lorelai invented Minions.
Yeah.
That's
yellowists
crazy.
With goggles.
That's absurd.
Oh, speaking of Minions, been listening to Minion Death Cult.
Is it good? I've never listened to it.
It is great.
You like
They're
it?
They're so fun.
It's a topic that I am into a lot, which is, terrible Facebook pages and shit like that.
Yeah, the psycho boomer Nazi set that
oh
is like
God.
Trying to decipher reality through the lens of hate and confusion. Ugh. And poor grammar, because honestly, who knows what half of these people are saying? They spend a lot of time piecing it together.
I do love the cropped boomer memes account.
Hell yeah.
So funny.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. I love it when they get on their high horse.
Yeah, I'm hopefully going to talk about... I'm going to be on Death Panel soon. And one of the things when I was hanging out with them for the debates that we talked about was I'm obsessed with Sonic the Hedgehog memes, and I've been wanting to write like some sort of oral history of them or something like that.
Well, then it becomes a written history.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. A written history, or like, you know what I mean? Just like a...
You want to map it out.
I just want to map out like all these different disparate, like not even connected people who've come to these similar conclusions using Sonic the Hedgehog.
Ooh, the Sonic Rhizome.
Obsessed. I'm obsessed.
That rules.
Yeah. And so I was thinking about listening to more stuff like that about like people who are charting internet stuff. Like New Models is another one that I should probably listen to. I've been lazy lately.
Yeah. Look, it's hard to pay attention to the internet all the time. But you should pay attention to us. So you're going to be on Death Panel. When is that?
Not for a while. It's not the end of the month, like 24th or something.
Oh, yeah. I'm also going to be on... I'm going to be on Montez Press Radio around the end of the month, too. So, yeah, I'm
going
to be...
We're going out there. We're blossoming as a podcast and
we're making friends.
Off.
We're influencing people.
We're taking off.
Oh, buddy. We're hanging out. Talking.
Doing it.
Yeah. I'm gonna be fleshing out a theory hour, so y'all get ready, cause the books are gonna be mentioned. The notes are going to be quoted. The text will be cross-referenced, and you better believe the terminology will be unpacked.
Damn, that's like badass. That's crazy.
Yeah, fuck grad school.
You don't need it.
Hard.
You don't need it. Though I do reserve that I may end up there if my life really goes south. And hey, I just need to buy time.
Or if anybody wants to invite us to go to Yale, we'll go there and we will study with Hito Stereo.
I would love to. Oh, yeah, that's the other thing we're doing next week. Next week, we're doing the Hito Sterile. I don't know how to pronounce German and I don't want to learn. You're the one who went to Berlin.
Yeah.
You do it.
Yeah, das ist richtig.
Hell yeah.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
Oh, cool.
Hito Steril.
There, you did it.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sorry. I just have to pretend that I'm wearing Lederhosen if I can say anything in German now.
Just this cute little image in your head, though. It's mm-hmm. nice.
Yeah, it helps me get there. So we just hit an hour.
Okay. That's good. Let's wrap up. Is there anything else that we forgot?
We plugged our shows. We talked about the Patreon. We Epsteined out.
Someone, yeah, really, I really encourage people to look through the flight logs and let us know other art people to mention who are on there. And yeah. We'll look into it.
Yeah. If you guys want to, we can bring back an early ask. If you guys have any shout outs about some bullshit that you guys have been through in the art world and you want that to be aired, kind of like a small business tyrants section where you have the ability to, direct the flow away from criminals who you've come up against in this lawless town. Please feel free to reach out.
Feel free to reach out. Whatever you, if you don't want to sit on air, you just want to vent, you can do that too.
Yeah. You don't have to be a part of the spectacle, but you can reach out.
We also have a Discord. And it's a really nice community.
Oh, yeah.
Feel free to reach out.
And then you can land in there.
Land in there. Great.
Very exciting. Very exciting. Everything is looking up.
Everything's doing well. I love our show. Everybody. Yeah.
Happy Mercury in retrograde. Happy Chiron in retrograde. Chiron or Chiron, some people say, is the comet that is named after the wounded hero of Greek mythology who would heal everybody else except for themselves. This is a astrological influence that the comet's rotation will add an air of reminiscence to your communities and to your influences and relationships, and happy times, happy introspection, everybody.
Damn.
Yeah.
Introspection. That's a great word, and I think something that our podcast is indicative of, it's a good way to describe our philosophy or ideology on this show is introspection, because like we said earlier, everybody is influenced by the capitalist system, including yourselves and ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's a deeply seated thing, and it's something we all need to examine and do a little work in ourselves. We can't just like brush it off like it's not our problem. Like we're doing everything right and it's not our problem, because that's how you get a bunch of like bullshit reactionary opinions.
Yeah. It's true. We just sit here, take the time, think about it.
Think about it. You don't have to like fucking flog yourself like a Catholic or whatever.
No, in fact, don't.
Don't.
That's not thinking. Flogging is not thinking.
But I think that's kind of where a lot of people come from when they think about like self-criticism or introspection, but it's not like that.
Yeah. If you're saying sorry too many times, you're not really processing what is going on.
It's not about scolding.
Oh.
I feel like that's like a Catholic teacher word.
Yeah. Like, just reprimanding.
Yeah.
Bad. That rap, rap, rap is the sound of me dressed as a nun hitting people in the knuckles.
And the repression and depravity. That's where that shit comes from.
Mm-hmm.
God.
Everybody.
It's all connected.
Take a step back. Love yourselves.
The good group.
Yeah. Doodle bitches unite.
Okay, anyway. Let's have fun.
Let's have fun.
Bye.
If you have an aeroplane that can fly the world and we can have a fantasy, it doesn't matter if you drive a limousine, it really doesn't matter if you drive for galaxy. I really don't care if you just drive a truck, I don't care if you just drive a limousine, it doesn't really matter if you drive a Ferrari, I really don't care cause I just love your company. Let's have fun, let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, lots of fun, let's have fun. Let's have fun, let's have fun, lots of fun.